Hey folks, I'm Nick D'Alessandro, and this is Wait 5 Minutes, a podcast about Florida by a Floridian. This week is a very special episode, a follow-up to last week's expedition through the Florida State Legislature. Last week, we ran the halls with our guest, Representative Anna V. Escamani. We went to three committees, met loads of other legislators, and saw the inner workings of life for our state government. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, I strongly suggest that you go back and listen to it now because this episode is a true companion piece, almost like a commentary episode to the previous episode. I spent the whole day with Representative Escamani, and by the time the afternoon rolled around, we had a lot to unpack. With a can of tomato juice in her hand, the representative and I sat down to unpack the day that was, and we begin at the beginning, the very first item of the day. Overnight, the state government prevented people from changing their genders on their driver's licenses. Out of nowhere. Throughout the day, Escamani got to work talking about this issue, publicly speaking on it, and that is where our conversation began as we began to debrief the day. So before you get into this episode, please go back and listen to that episode so that you understand everything that we're going to get into now. And before you hear from the representative herself, I just want to warn you, there is a little bit more PG-13 language than we normally have on this show. The representative speaks her mind. Once or twice, she uses language that we've defined as PG-13. I'm going to give this episode an explicit tag, but nothing ever dives into R-rated language. Without further ado, here is the representative. So I just want to start with talking about this morning, or rather last night. I woke up this morning to see an update on your Instagram about the gender on driver's license. Mm-hmm. When I walked through the door, it was what you were talking about. We've seen five people throughout the day. Can you give me a brief breakdown about what happened and sort of what happens next? Because we've done 1,000 other things today, and not one of that has had anything to do with that. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, part of this job is also just being connected to your community and responding to crises and trying to provide whatever clarity and certainty you can in the face of those crises. And I actually just got an email titled Florida Driver's License Trans People. So, I mean, this is top of mind for many of our community members. Basically, last night I got a screenshot of a letter from the Florida Highway of Motor Safety and Vehicle. This is a department that most folks don't consider to be very political. It's the department that provides your driver's licenses, that provides license plates, tags, very bureaucratic stuff. So this letter was very alarming, basically saying that trans people cannot have a driver's license that matches their gender identity, and essentially outing trans people and forcing individuals to carry a license that does not reflect who they are today. And my first reaction was to verify, like any good public servant. You don't want to share information that isn't verified. And so one of the weird aspects of this work is just the relationships you build, even among places where you don't necessarily have a friendship, you have a relationship, right? And so it turns out that the director of the department was an elected official. He was a Democrat. Technically still is, but he works with the DeSantis administration. So he's the director of the department. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to him immediately last night because I have his number, and I asked him, could you verify this letter for me? I also reached out to local tax collectors to see if they had received the letter. And long story short, the next 10 hours, we confirmed the letter as being real. It was issued by the department on Friday. Many tax collectors didn't even get it. It wasn't sent to them directly. And so now our community is panicked, and understandably so, because this just it's one, just painful and cruel. Trans people in particular have been attacked vehemently for no reason beyond a political agenda by the state and by other talking heads across the country, to the point where people have left the state of Florida. People no longer can access the care they need here. They don't feel like they can be themselves, and this is just one other effort at that.
And this is also, I mean, you talked about this a little bit, but that there's also a bill related to this as
correct.
Well. That would be House Bill 1639. It was to define the term sex as in opposition to one's own self-identified gender. Sex being defined by medical professionals as a biological definition of a person, and gender being how said person identifies themselves. This House bill would define sex, and that would have an impact on health insurance, but also those seeking gender-affirming care, most notably trans people in the state of Florida, who have already faced so much legislation and anti-trans rhetoric in the state and the country at large. That House bill at the time of this interview with the representative was still active, but it has since died in the Senate Rules Committee. Regardless, here is the representative talking about that bill and its impacts.
So that's the other aspect of this, is that there is legislation before us to basically do the same thing. So the question a lot of folks had is, how can they do this? There's a bill, it hasn't passed yet. How can a department just unilaterally decide to erase trans people? So we are investigating the administrative control of that.
Sure.
So Chapter 120 in Florida's law does provide administrative responsibilities to departments. Right. And so I'm assuming they're using Chapter 120, but okay. We have to confirm. We also have to confirm, you know, what is the path to fight back? Because that's the question a lot of people have. What do I do? There's always operational questions as there are advocacy questions. So from an advocacy perspective, how do you fight back? What are the legal challenges and approaches we can take? From a just practical operational perspective, what does this mean for me?
Sure.
What does this mean for someone who is trans, who already has a driver's license updated? What does this mean for someone who has a trans kid that's learning how to drive?
Right.
So we need to answer those questions as well, and I'm in the middle of trying to figure all that out.
Right, I mean, you use that language at the end that you're in the middle of it. We went to three committees in the span of, you know, 5.5-6 hours, and in that time, during breaks between those meetings, sometimes during the pre-meetings, you would be writing emails, you took a phone call, we were walking. Is that typical for you? I mean, you were finding out information on the fly, commenting on it, doing research, getting it. And then at one point we were passing elevators and somebody was like, did you see that? You saw? And you were like, yeah, we'll talk about it. I'm like, it feels like you're juggling not only the things that you have assigned in the day that are scheduled, the committee meetings, but then you're having these sort of, you know, little fires everywhere things. Is that typical? Is that a normal day? Or did I catch you on a day where you've got sort of a miniature crisis in the gaps between the other things?
No, I mean, it's a very normal day.
Yeah.
And there's just, it's overwhelming because as a member of the minority caucus, you're constantly playing defense. Mm. And I think most folks expect you to play defense on bills. It's a different ball game where you're playing defense on agencies.
Sure.
And on administrative rules.
And in the public eye, right? You're responding to something.
Correct.
Publicly as soon as you can and saying, hey, this is, I feel this way about it because of blank, blank, blank. And also there's this other thing politically going on.
And multiple people are emailing you
because
they're seeing it for the first time too. And they have questions that are very valid questions. One of my trans friends reached out to me too. And by the way, it's not even just the practical questions, it's the emotional.
Hmm.
I mean, this has been a very emotional day. I'm from the attack on trans people to legislation, you know, preserving Confederate monuments.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just like a constant pattern of policies that are really demoralizing and hurtful to different marginalized communities. So you also need to be that source of strength and support for impacted people. And I take that responsibility very seriously.
Sure. I mean, there were many things that were passed. Well, I guess let me ask one question first. How do you get on these subcommittees that you're on? You were on three today. You're on three total. You're on multiple.
Yeah. Well, so today was actually two committees and one subcommittee.
Oh, okay.
So the committees will continue to meet after week five of session. Subcommittees stop meeting by next week.
Okay.
But to your point, to your question of how do I get on them? Well, when you enter legislative session, you're given a preference list. You can request to serve on different committees, but as members of Minority Caucus, we rarely get what we request. So the only committee that I serve on that I personally requested was Ways and Means, and everything else you just are just given, and you
right.
you just have to perform. You just have to know your shit and do your work and be ready.
Right, because that was one of my things. Is I mean, there were times where during several of those where you were citing numbers, terms, things like that. Is that you doing that independent research? Is that your team? Is that the caucus? Like, who is preparing these numbers so that you can come in ready to not only have an opinion on it based on your politics, but also to be able to back it up with numbers and figures? Who's doing that part of the process?
So I'm doing a lot of it.
Yeah.
Every state is different.
Sure.
And being the minority is also different.
Sure.
So we just have smaller staff at the minority office compared to the majority office. So our staff will do what they can, and they do develop what we call blue books, which are just a packet of blue boxes that explain, you know, what the bill does from a staff perspective. But at the end of the day, like, you really have to prepare yourself. You have to read the bill yourself. You have to be ready to manage the issues before you. We also have staff for our legislative office. I will say my staff is more tasked with constituent services.
Sure.
Than policy.
The stuff back at home rather than the
correct
debates you're dealing with here.
Correct. Yeah. Mainly because that for me is priority, and we have a huge caseload, not sure. just unique to our district. We attract folks from across the state that contact our office. And of course, we also need our team to manage the call flow. During session, we get a lot of phone calls to the office and emails into the office about policy. So staff have to manage that. Staff had to manage my schedule because we get a lot of visitors into the office. Sure. You didn't get to see this as much because we were stuck in committee, but throughout the day, we probably had 15 visitors to the office.
Oh, wow. Sure.
And so those are groups coming from different parts of the state, advocating for issues that matter to them. So this, we need our staff to also be focused on that. So the policy work, I really carry a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I also try to support other colleagues. Because a part sure. of my responsibility, especially as a junior member going to become a senior member of the minority caucus, you know, I'm a mama bear to others and making sure that they understand what the bill does and doesn't do. We share questions. Sure. So if you noticed, because the debate got tight on the Confederate monument bill, that we decided quickly as caucus members that we wanted the two leading voices that are Black women in the caucus in that committee to close the debate.
Right.
There was only 5 minutes of debate. So that was a decision that we all made, myself included, to say, obviously I have opinions about this bill, but I want to give my debate time to the two individuals who are directly impacted.
Right.
And so you have to make those calls, you know, as they happen, but we work as a caucus collectively, and so any bill prep I do, I also try to use it to help others.
Sure. I mean, I hope you don't mind me saying this, because one of the things I thought was really interesting before the third subcommittee, the one that was related to the training for teachers, you guys had the pre-meeting, and in that pre-meeting, you were figuring out questions that you wanted to ask, and then you were sorting out who was going to ask them. Is that common? I mean, I just found that so remarkable, and you're talking about that, and you're talking about on the fly pivoting who's asking questions at what moment in a committee, saying you should do it, you're the faces that should be saying this. It's interesting because it's almost, it's like rhetoric, it's, I know it's rhetoric, but it's like rhetoric strategy on top of I have facts and figures. It's also we have time, we have this many people, we want to make these many people vocal. Is that common? I mean, and what are the advantages of that?
So you are trying to balance out all of the limitations you have in this process.
Right.
House rules are a framework that also include limitations that we have to abide by, even though I voted against them, I have to still follow them. Limitations include the time that we have in the committee, how many bills are in the committee. State affairs, as one example, packed agenda, intentionally done to limit perspectives on the bill itself. So our colleagues across the aisle are implementing their own tactics to limit public testimony, to limit debate, to limit our ability to ask questions, to really kind of put pressure on us not to ask questions. Because while all this is happening, there's politics involved. I don't mean partisan politics. I mean just relationships between colleagues. Like if I piss off someone, my bill will never get a hearing.
Sure.
Or I'm going to lose my budget item. So you're navigating a lot right. of these just kind of really transactional, relational dynamics the whole
sure.
time, which is not fun. And it's an art. It's an art form to maintain your cool when you have these terrible bills in front of you.
Right.
And as a woman of color, it's even more important for me to do that because I'll be labeled very quickly if I don't manage my tone. So I'm always having to like code switch a little bit and, you know, internalize my rage in order to get a point across. Because if I start yelling, I lose attention of the people I'm trying to persuade. So that is something else you're always navigating. To your point about, you know, dialing out questions, we want everyone to shine.
Mm.
I also want my colleagues to practice asking questions, especially for my freshman colleagues,
sure.
because I'm leaving in 2 years. I only have one more term, assuming I'm reelected.
Mm.
And so it's part of my job is to prepare the next generation of lawmakers. And so I want to also, you know, not be collaborative. I want to share the good questions.
Right.
And it's not the intent to ask questions is not to be showy. The intent to ask questions is to really demonstrate points from the bill, to get that bill sponsor to highlight what your point is, which happened today in the higher ed committee when my colleague who sponsored this bill going after education around racism when he didn't know what redlining was.
Hi, it's me again, host Nick. I'm still here. I let interviewer Nick take the reins for a little while there, but I'm interrupting because I want to tell you about this moment. In the subcommittee around education, our last committee of the day, the bill being discussed was on how to train teachers on using curriculum in the state, including teaching about racism in America. Eskimani brought up teaching different topics related to systemic racism, including such topics as redlining. Redlining is a process in which Black Americans were prevented from living in notably white neighborhoods because banks were preventing them from getting loans to live in specific areas where there were not Black residents. This wasn't just for Black Americans, it happened to non-white Americans for a century. When Eskimani brought up teaching the topic, the sponsor for the bill, John Snyder, asked Eskimani what redlining was. A bit of a stunning moment, a sponsor of a bill about education in Florida about these topics, not knowing about the sorts of topics that would be taught in these classes. Eskimani brought up redlining for a specific reason. Here is what she has to say about that.
And so I didn't even have to ask the question. I was going to ask him if he believed that structural racism was real. I didn't even have to because that answer answered my question for me. So the goal of asking questions is to get things on the record. We right. want to also potentially build a legal foundation for lawsuits.
Right.
So you ask questions with intent. A question's not never meant to be random.
That was very interesting in the last couple ones because we talked about that last summer where you were saying, you know, you guys know that you're the minority in all three of those. I mean, to put it frankly, you had four, there were multiple bills that were discussed and were put before you today in those three subcommittees. Most of them were bills that were passed unanimously, near complete agreement. And,
correct.
And on from both sides of the aisle, quickly voted on, occasional public speech. There's four, two in the middle one in the you know, the sandwich ones. But in all four of those, the minority lost. And as far as I can tell, it was, well, not was, I can't say that I was going to say it was party.
I mean,
line,
the bear was mixed.
But for the people who voted against that, they were still predominantly the Democrats.
Correct.
In that room. So.
And every committee is established on purpose by that. Mm. So a lot of folks will ask me like, oh, why can't you get this bill passed? And it's like, well, the deck is set against us. We can't get really good bills passed because we don't have the numbers. And it doesn't mean the Democratic bills don't get heard. It's just very rare. I would say it's like a 5-to-1 ratio.
Sure.
For every 5 Republican bills, there's like one Democratic bill that moves. It's and that doesn't mean they get to the House floor.
Yeah.
And so every committee is very much designed to benefit the majority party. Mm. And the Republican colleagues are also much more keen to get in line than not. It's very rare they're not in formation to all agree. So it just makes it very difficult to win in the committee process, actually stop a bill.
Yeah.
In my now 6 years here, I've only seen one bill be killed. And probably it was because the Republicans hated the bill sponsor too.
Sure.
So there was a nice collaboration there. But I mean, in a lot of cases, it just bills are predetermined.
It's very interesting, Anna's perspective here, because she's saying that the deck is stacked against the minority party, the Democrats, by the party in power, the Republicans, with their majority. It comes up in different ways, from the process of a bill, even down to the scheduling of committees. Let's get into the nitty-gritty details of how these bills and committees interact with each other.
So what happens now? We had a bunch of things that were passed through the committee today. What happens now that we're moving, those have moved on? Where do they go?
Well, for the bills,
it depends, right?
Yeah, so every bill is going to have a different timeline.
Yeah.
So they're likely going to have at least one more stop before they go to the House floor. But it does depend. The Speaker's office assigns a number of committee stops. Bills that they like, they only give two stops to. Mm. Bills that they're somewhat neutral on have three committee stops, and then bills they don't like get four.
And who determines that?
Speaker's office.
The Speaker's office, that is obviously part of the Republican majority,
correct,
decides how many committees they need to go through.
Correct. So we're constantly up against, you know, a system that we don't have control over.
Right.
And so some of the most egregious bills only have two stops because leadership likes them. Mm. So they'll continue on the committee process. I mentioned this earlier, but subcommittees, which are the smaller committees that fall under the silos of the big committees. So, for example, like the State Affairs is a committee, but there's like three subcommittees underneath it.
Sure.
Those subcommittees will stop meeting by week 5 of legislative session based on House rules. So from week 6, 7, 8, you'll have just committee meetings of the big committees, and then you'll have floor sessions. We'll be on the House floor.
Right.
So that's where these bills will continue to move forward. For me personally, I will track them. Right. I will follow them. I will watch other committee hearings because I want to also see what questions other people ask, what those answers are. I want to have as much as I want to prepare myself as much as possible before these bills get to the House floor.
Right.
And the House floor is a different ball game. We need to be ready on the House floor with amendments that are presented to the entire body. Mm-hmm. We need to have really thoughtful questions. We are time certain on the House floor. That means everything is restricted by time. This was another House rule that I voted no on. But everything is structured debate, structured questions, and leadership also dictates how much time we have. So on even some of the worst bills, we've only been given 20 minutes to ask questions. And so if I have a list of 50 questions I might have to ask, I have to narrow that down to 15.
Right.
And then assign them out.
And I don't mean this to be disparaging to them, but the ones that are more like, okay, yeah, we all agree this is something that we should do, or you know,
right.
We're helping out a representative who's doing something nice for his constituency or his or her constituency, that stuff is not going to take a long time. That stuff will take 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Correct.
Right? But then you're dealing with huge, massive topics, like, for example, the ones that we debated for. The bear one was an hour and a half today. Is going to be allotted the same amount of time as
well, not necessarily a lot of the same amount of time. Mm. I mean, so committees are a little more fluid, even though they are still restricted, they are a little more fluid. The House floor, so the Rules Committee dictates how much time every issue has.
Yeah.
So they're going to assign an amount of time for Q&A and then an amount of time for debate.
Yeah.
And it's going to be potentially very limited.
Sure.
So even if the bill, you know, went on for a period of time in committee, it doesn't mean we're going to get that much time on the House floor.
Right. Just changes the ballgame entirely when you move into the House itself.
That's and our speaker, I mean, he seems to want to keep floor sessions like under 2-3 hours, which is just not realistic with the size of these bills, but he has the power to limit that. He has the power to say, we're only going to have 20 minutes of debate. Mm-hmm. Which, again, is not enough time for a lot of these terrible bills. I've had some of the worst bills, like attacks on higher education, House Bill 999, Senate Bill 266, where I was literally given 45 seconds to debate.
Okay, she's talking about House Bill 999, Senate Bill 266. That was from last year, 2023. The American Civil Liberties Union of Florida says that this bill, quote, dictates what courses of study college students could choose to pursue, prohibiting fields of study involving race and gender studies, end quote. It also, quote, prohibits spending on activities that promote diversity, equity, and inclusion, end quote. The term DEI has become a talking point. You've probably heard it a lot, and the state of Florida has become very active in its pursuit to prevent DEI measures from being in place at colleges, of places of work, things like that. So this bill was a huge part of that. I will include a link to the bill itself on the government website and the ACLU's breakdown of the bill. Giving Anna Escamani, who represents Orlando, where UCF is located, and part of that bill specifically mentions UCF, to only give Anna Escamani 45 seconds of debate on the House floor, that hardly seems logical, and the representative agrees.
I mean, it's so frustrating, because by no means is that enough time for anyone, let alone, you know, a lawmaker, to unpack their opposition to something, and yet those are the restrictions within House rules that we're forced to follow.
I want to clarify something you said earlier about the State Affairs Committee had 10 things on it, right?
Right.
And two of them had very serious debate, to the point that
right. You
got through all of them except for the very last one, which everybody knew was going to be the contentious one. There was nearly everyone in the audience was there to express public opinion about that. And are you saying that committee is intentionally stacked so that it is impossible
yes.
to have very long debate about
yes,
that?
Yes, and that bill is intentionally put at the end. Mm. But you know what's interesting is that sometimes Republicans will put a bad bill first because they'll have Democratic bills on the agenda at the end and they want the clock to run out so all the Democratic bills die. And so I've seen it go both ways.
Is this well known? Is this just something that everybody knows? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the chair, but like if you see Democratic bills, you can assume they're going to be heard last.
Yeah. It's very interesting how that all clicks together.
And it's a tool of control because
sure.
to also try to, you know, make sure we, quote, behave, right? Because we don't want to kill a colleague's bill.
Right.
And like I said earlier, 1 out of 5. Mm. So it's not that many.
Sure. when they come, you have to focus on them for your party to make sure that you're aligned on the topic.
Right, and you don't want to hurt your colleagues' chances of getting their bill heard.
Sure.
We're getting near the end of our chat now. The representative has some eager college students waiting to see her face, but I've got a pressing question that I needed to ask.
One of the, this is a question I have, and I'm going to just ask it verbatim, and I asked you earlier, did you have lunch today?
No. I had a protein puck. That's what, it's called that. And one of my girlfriends gave them to me. And so I had a protein puck, and then I just had a can of cold tomato juice.
I wanted that. I was going to ask about the tomato juice next, but I left that on the record too. Because you said, when we were leaving the last committee, you were like, I needed to... And I, for some reason, thought you were joking, and then all of a sudden you had an entire.
And then I'd like pop a can of tomato juice.
I was like, oh no, you're not kidding.
Excellent source of vitamin C.
That's great. I love that.
For the record.
Well, I was.
And girl has to stay healthy
right,
here.
You're running. I mean, like I said, we were all day moving. I the only times that we were not moving is when we were sitting down during committee, and it sounded like you were sitting passively listening. Oftentimes asking questions or involved in debate or talking with your colleagues next to you about the debate at hand. How many days are like this? How many days in the session look like this?
Every day.
Yeah.
And actually, if you notice, I don't leave the committee room.
Yeah.
I
notice some people do.
Right.
And I also notice, and I don't...
And sometimes you have to if you have a
sure.
bill hearing.
Oh, yeah. I'm
so
sorry.
I totally empathize with that. But, like, I did not use a restroom until... No. My last committee, because I just don't have the time.
You also expressed sentiment, or I guess you expressed debate on several. You expressed debate on all the major ones that were discussed. While I know some of your, and I'm not saying this to be disparaging to colleagues of yours who didn't, but I found it very interesting that in every single one, including the one that didn't have any debate, that was unanimously agreed upon in the last one, the higher ed one, that you still expressed a favorable opinion on it in the debate section. Is that something you feel is part of your, I don't mean to say this sort of any negative implication, but reputation, or do you think it's something
right.
that is part of your interest in saying, this is something that really matters to me, and even though I know it's going to pass unanimously, I still want to say something about it. Is that something that really is on your mind when you go into these committees?
Well, it is. I mean, part of this process is expressing your values.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't sent up here by my constituents just to sit back and go along, get along, and, you know, not be their voice. And so if I see issues that are positive or negative, I want to make that clear. And I try to, like I said earlier, I try to maintain a positive tone, even if it's about a bill that I don't like. Mm. I'm not here to belittle individuals. I also think it's important. A good lawmaker tries to separate the bill from the person as much as possible. That's why we use titles here.
Yeah.
We say representative
yeah.
because we're trying to, like, you know, look at this person as more of a vessel than a
sure.
human at
a lot
that
of formality
time.
In those points of the conversation.
And the formality matters because it just helps. I mean, I probably get frustrated by the slowing down of the process. You know, in the Senate side, let me tell you, in the Senate side, they'll let members go back and forth.
Hmm.
In the House, they're very strict about you have to go through the speaker, you have to go through the chair. So if you notice, it's like, Representative Blunt, you're recognized. A part of that, I think, is designed to slow down the process. A part of it, I think, also is to, like, cool people down a little bit because
I definitely feel that. I could definitely feel like it was a creative element of structure. That was the thing
right.
that I felt was most notable, was being like, we can't get into the rat-a-tat of an argument because
correct.
I have to go to the chair, and so do you.
Correct.
Like it creates a pathway that isn't
right.
just, I'm arguing with you, which could have happened at any point in most
right.
of those meetings.
And honestly, like, part of me is like, I kind of want to argue with you because
sure.
I think your position is bad.
Sure.
But I also see the benefit of slowing things down, and, like, you don't want to say something that you didn't mean to say.
Sure. Tempo.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's, you know, an element of positivity to that as well. But I also wish that we could just be more direct.
Mm.
And, you know, if the committee process is supposed to be a process where you debate ideas
mm.
and make bills better, then we should be able to have a good back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it just feels more like a, like, procedural, you know, a show than it is, like,
right.
we're actually going to hear your opinion to make this bill better.
But I do appreciate how much there is some element of candor. I feel like a lot of people have this impression that there is this absolute formality in it. In all of the meetings, I saw some of the mask slip of just like,
right.
I really feel this. I don't just vote on this from the party or I vote on this from.
Well, there's some moments too with like one of the guys that came up on my amendment, which I was surprised my amendment, I mean, got that many speaker cards.
It got a real conversation.
It was so funny. But one of the dudes, first of all, like, he's awful, and he puts his name on every single amendment. You never actually see him. His name is Barney Bishop. So when I see Barney, I'm like, wow, I've never seen you before. Because he puts his name on every bill. It's like, Barney Bishop waves yes, and it's like, he's not here. So I was like, oh, well, you're here. But the other guy that said he voted yes in my amendment, I was like, you heard the man, you heard the man.
Right. And
then, the chair major to correct him. I was like, come on, chair, like, stop. But
you heard that right. Someone from the public came to speak out against one of Anna's amendments she put forward to make a point and accidentally said that he waved in support of her amendment when his statement clearly made it out that he disagreed with her amendment. The chair of that committee, the State Affairs Committee, Lawrence McClure, corrected the member of the public, which is an ironic little sequence of events.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, you still try to like make it as interactive as possible.
Yeah.
Because the only way you survive.
Not stoic. It's not state. I mean, there is an element of personality in all of those that I just
found.
That at times it definitely felt like there was some, oof, that's like, I don't know if that's, it definitely at times was like, that's very much pushing against what many people would expect. And I just found it to be very against people's expectations by just being straight up and saying, I feel this. This is actually what I feel.
Right.
I don't like this.
Right.
I do like this, whatever those things are.
You know, the other thing, too, about the debate process is we're not allowed to debate twice.
Yeah.
And that's that's not really a debate for me.
Sure.
Like when we go through, you know, members debate, it's like, well, if we were debating, we'd go back and forth, right? But we can't.
Right.
So it's more like giving a speech.
It's more like your closing statement.
Correct. It's more of a closing statement, which is frustrating because it should be debate. We should actually have a little candor, go back and forth, and like, let's, you know, do you guys actually support your ideas? Because let's have that debate, right? Yeah, but it's not. And most of my Republican colleagues, they don't say a damn thing. At least vote yes without saying a damn thing. So that's always frustrating too, because it's like, if you actually support this, can you like, please provide me with the reasons why? Versus just taking a cue from leadership?
It would be, I admit that part of me is very interested in the idea of someone from who you know is in favor of a bill that you're against, being able to, instead of having to go through the sponsor, being able to look that person face to face and go like, I have a question for you on why you said that thing, but I imagine that is something that you would prefer to rather than just saying, here's what I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I will say that a lot of conversations happen offline as well.
I noticed that. You said that a lot of people said that across the aisle were saying that conversation.
So you try to be respectful and, you know, I'm not going to give away all my questions, but, you know, I'm going to express where I think the bill could be substantially improved or if the bill is necessary or not. I will say Dean Black, the sponsor of the Confederate Monument Bill, never called me.
Representative Dean Black, he presented the bill about historical monuments that we talked about last week.
Never reached out to me.
I believe Representative Rayner said the same thing.
Correct. I actually got his phone number and I texted him about my amendment to give him a heads up out of respect, but he never even reached out to me. So those moments too where it's kind of like, okay, dude, like you're not even participating in the process the way that we're expected to. And so that's also really frustrating because the expectation is so much more different for those of us in the minority caucus and those of us also who are women and women of color. Like, we just face a much bigger degree of peer pressure than others.
I have one, my last question. I'll let you get out of here. How do you think it's gone so far? How are you hoping the next month and a half are going to go?
It's been hard. But I also expect it to be hard. I don't sugarcoat it. I don't expect this is going to be a place of positivity, of bills that I feel like are going to make a positive impact to people's lives. So I really prepare for the worst. And I would say that it's been delivering some pretty bad measures and pretty bad policies that are progressing forward. I'm hopeful that we'll see more Democratic bills get agendaed. And don't get me wrong, there are some good Republican bills too. Obviously, I voted on several today. But I was hopeful that with Ron DeSantis ending his presidential bid that things would tone down here, and the issues and bills attacking trans people, attacking the LGBTQ plus community, banning abortion, attacking African-American community members and Black history. I was hoping that would be toned down, but not only have those measures continue, but we see a lot of bad just economic bills. So bills that are taking away wages from people, that are forcing children to work, that are preempting local governments when their ability to deliver services to their constituents. So I'm definitely keeping I'm on my toes. I'm keeping my eyes on the prize, but it's pretty overwhelming, and continues to be an environment where not every Floridian is heard.
Yeah. Anything that this is my actual last one. Anything on the docket that you're looking forward to sponsoring or pushing?
I mean, like, we have a really good bill for veterans right now that just got heard in the Senate. We're trying to get a hearing in the House. It's also bipartisan. I have a Republican primeco on it that would prohibit these predatory VA benefit companies from operating without being accredited. Yeah. So it's a really good consumer bill for our veterans. I have another bill that's focused on preventing elopement of kids with autism in our school system.
Those bills, that's House Bill 1351 and House Bill 1395, both of which died in committees. I'll include links to both. They are both certainly worth a read.
So I'm proud to file a lot of good bills. It's just always so difficult to get them through in this environment. So we're pushing for a hearing. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
At the very end, the representative turns the table on me.
I'm glad to hear it. That's good. Anything else? I think that's everything.
I'm going to turn around a little bit. How's been your experience here?
I'll get closer. As a person who grew up loving politics and have been fascinated by it since the 2008 election when I was 12, you know, when Obama was elected, it's unlike anything I've ever... It's exactly as I imagined. And also totally different than I imagined. Like, it has the same, like, you know, we have to do this system. There's a certain way of doing things. We have the formality of it. There's a literal gavel in all three of the committees. But also the pre-planning meetings, the three of those that you had, the pre-meeting meetings, were, like, three of the shining moments for me of the entire time, because it was so fascinating to hear you guys just straight up being like, okay, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do. Did you see that? Yeah, okay. And then also the interpersonal elements of it being an office job is the other thing. At times I was blown away at how much it just feels like an office job. You know everybody, you know people's names, you see right. People in the hallway, you're like, hey, how's it going? I saw a nice job yesterday, good job, see you later. And then you move on to something else. But then also you're then sitting down and being like, so I believe that the law should be playing. Like, you know what I mean? Humans can't prevent that sort of personal element up from slipping in. And it just blows my mind how that's even present here in the capital of the state. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it's been a surreal day.
I appreciate you highlighting that it is an office job. I don't think folks realize just how much like emails I do every day.
Yeah.
Like after I finished my debate on the bear bill, I was emailing back the like 50 some people who contacted us about the bear bill.
Right.
And I was like, I'm voting no. Thank you.
Here's
voting no.
Right.
Right. And so it is a lot of inboxing.
You're also navigating building to building. Let's go up here, go down this way, across this bridge. Let's check into this office. Okay. Yeah, there we go. And then you came back here and you were like, Yasmin, where are we going for this one? Okay.
Right.
See you later. Like,
right.
It's all very on the fly. And like you are juggling the three things at once. And like you said, I mean, it is interesting, the interpersonal elements of it as well. I mean, we would pass by people who you were just having a debate with, and you would sort of, I don't remember that representative's name, but you sort of said an argument back to him after it was over, being like, hey, I kind of didn't like what you said as he was going away, but it, you know what I mean? It has this,
yeah.
It's this fascinating interpersonal thing on top of a thing that so many people's eyes are on and could impact the year after the session is over. I've just been so blown away by how formal and informal it is at the exact same time. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
In a way that I did not expect. You know?
Yeah.
But it's been great. I mean, I was like, I wanna come all the time.
I wanna hey, you're welcome all the time. You're totally welcome.
I also appreciate how many people were there to speak their public comment on a thing, and were either sometimes representing organizations, sometimes representing a union of people, sometimes just saying, I'm Nick, and I want to say this.
Yeah.
Because I have personal experience of this, and here's what I want to say. It's, I think some people might get afraid of doing that, but there was a young woman who spoke at the State Affairs Committee who was, I think, very against her own anxiety, stepped up and said something, and was very impressive that she stepped up to that when most other people are much older.
And Ruth, who spoke at the Bear Bill.
Yes, the other person who traveled, she said she traveled over 6 hours.
And she was so nervous. You could see how nervous she was, and yet she shined. And just the multi-generational perspectives from everyday Floridians, that's what keeps me going.
That the public have a space to do that. I think we forget that. I think people who have strong opinions about this sometimes go, what can we do? How can we have any impact on this? And I know Tallahassee's far away, and there's been lots of conversation about that since I started paying attention to it. But it's fascinating to me that it's an option. That people can just come in here and say, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And here's my experience, and here's why. It feels so, I think for some people, even me who follows this stuff so actively, it feels inaccessible at times, even though I have, you know, the email of a representative that I can contact.
And phone number.
Right, if I want to contact you, I can contact you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like there is this idea in our heads that it's a marble hall. You know, it's
the untouchables.
Right.
Yeah, and I had that same vibe when I was 20 years old and came to Tallahassee for the first time with UCF Day of the Capitol. Where you see a lawmaker and you're like, oh, I can't talk to them. You know, like they're really special and important. It's like, bitch, no, they're just regular people.
Right.
Like, go engage, go talk.
People. They're going to eat a tomato juice when they get back.
100%.
I mean, there were people drinking sodas during the committees. People had snacks. People were on their phones. Like,
It's
normal human beings doing normal
human beings. Please don't feel like it's something that you can't have an impact on or that's out of reach for you.
Right.
You gotta
ask questions, build the relationships, and show up. It's work, but it's part of the it's accessible. And I think that's just my continuing effort is to just thin that line. Because I think some people want people to feel like it is inaccessible. I think some
That's intentional. Intentional. The system is built to be inaccessible. That is on purpose. But there's plenty of ways to break through.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's
all I got.
So if you walk away from this episode with one thing, it is that last sentiment from the representative herself. There are plenty of ways to break through. Government officials can hear you. You can drive up to Tallahassee and speak on a bill, make your voice heard, speak up for what you believe in, knock on their door to have a chat, send them an email, reach out. There are people in government who want you to be intimidated, to be afraid of showing up and letting them know how you feel, positive or negative. Don't be afraid. There are plenty of ways to break through. Yours may just be the voice to change their mind, to leave a mark, to switch a no to a yes. That may be you. Ask questions, build relationships, and show up. Just show up. Thank you again to Representative Anna Eskamani and her team for having me. It is the privilege of my life to get to talk to people like her and all of these incredible professionals that I have on this show, but it is unbelievable to me that I got to spend a day at the legislature. I am truly honored that it's a thing that I get to do, and I look forward to hopefully showing up next year for another marathon through the halls of government, meeting some new legislators and learning even more about the way that this state works. Who knows what history will unfold the next time we arrive to Tallahassee, Florida. Thank you so much for listening to this episode and last week's episode of Wait 5 Minutes. It means so much to me to get to tell these stories, to get to talk to Representative Anna Eskamani, and to learn so much about the way that this state government works. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps the show become more visible. You can also find the show on Instagram or Facebook at WFMPod, and you can send me an email at WFMPod@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again to Representative Anna V. Eskamani for having me. It was such an honor to get to do this, and I look forward to chatting with her again in the future. You can follow her on Instagram. I'll include a link to both her website and her Instagram so you can see all that the representative is doing with her time, because she is one of the busiest people I've ever met in my life, perhaps the busiest. Thank you again to the representative. All the music used in this episode was originally composed. All right, folks, we are not done with the legislature, however. We talked a lot about some bills. We talked about the Black Bears. We talked about a lot of things in passing, but I like to do a little bit of a breakdown. You know, last summer we talked a lot about the bills that went through the state government because there were some very, very controversial ones. But I wanted to just do sort of a roundup of some of the big topics that came out of the state government this year, because you may have missed some. I know that I've missed them. There was one that just signed that I had never heard of until the day that I'm recording this episode. So on April 1st, we are going to be talking about a bunch of the really high profile bills that made it through the state legislature, including the bill about our Florida Black Bears. I look forward to digging into that with you next Monday. Until then, be good to yourself, be good to others, drink more water, and go Gator and muddy the water. Have a very lovely end of March. I will see you in April.